and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. It is Thanksgiving week. It is rivalry week out on the gridiron. Also got a little bit of hoops action as always. Got those holiday tournaments. And UVA is coming off of a bye week. In the Tony Elliott era, they are 5-0 coming off bye weeks. The other guy that's also undefeated coming off the bye week is always Greg Medea from the Daily Progress. How you doing, Greg?
Yeah, Preston, good to be with you. Not so much of a bye week for me. I was driving back and forth through the hills of Southern Virginia into the hills of Southern West Virginia to catch the basketball at the Greenbrier. Interesting two games Virginia played, but yeah, not a rest for me. Watched a lot of football on Saturday, so you know, back at it for what will be a huge game coming up Saturday for Virginia football.
You see, that's why you're undefeated, because you're always working, you're always in a rhythm, you're ready to go. I imagine no one knows those Southern West Virginia roads better than you do.
You know, I was telling somebody this in the press conference room the other day at the Greenbrier, because I went to West Virginia University. I've been down there, covered some spring football practices that West Virginia had had done down at the Greenbrier. I'd covered the PGA golf at the Greenbrier as a, you know, student reporter, had gone down. I'd been to a wedding and was a groomsman in a wedding at the Greenbrier. Had one of my old college roommates got married there. So I'd seen a lot, not basketball in a ballroom, no. So that was a first for me. Check that off the list.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot more about the Greenbrier this weekend. I've got five burning questions. The ballroom may or may not come up. We'll see. But obviously, Greg, it all comes down to this. I mean, every year it seems like something is on the line whenever Virginia and Virginia Tech meet up in the Commonwealth Clash. This year is the exact same. You've got the ACC championship picture coming into a clearer focus. You've also got just bragging rights as normal, but also, you know, Virginia trying to get off the schneid in an opportunity when Virginia Tech's in a kind of a little bit of transition here. So a lot on the line. But first, let's start with ACC championship picture here, because it became a lot clearer over the weekend. I know a lot of fans, I think, had like the three-leg parlay of if Louisville could get a win at SMU, and if Duke or if UNC could beat Duke, and all these other different things. Well, none of it happened. So everything's still on the line this weekend. But what did happen is Pitt beating Georgia Tech, which now clears the path that for all Virginia has to do is beat Virginia Tech. Easier said than done.
Yeah, that man, Pitt smoked Georgia Tech too. 28-0 lead, and then they had the 100-yard pick six to kind of finish off the Yellow Jackets. Impressive performance by Pitt, and they're still alive, right? All Pitt needs is either is a win plus either a Virginia or SMU loss, and Pitt will be in the title game. So Pitt very much alive, but for Virginia, it's got to be one of the biggest games in program history, right? They haven't had a 10-win season since 1989. A win secures them a berth in the conference title game. And then either to get to 10 wins or reach the ACC title game, Tony Elliott gets a one-year automatic extension. A lot on the line. But, of course, the most important being that coveted spot in Charlotte, because if you get to Charlotte, you've got a shot to reach the CFP. And who would have thought at the beginning of the year that this Virginia team could make a run and possibly get to the college football playoff for the first time in its history? So plenty on the line, but it all starts Saturday. You got to beat the Hokies, so the rival that you haven't beaten often in the last two decades. What, one win in the last 20 years against Virginia Tech? Virginia's got to do something different that it hasn't been able to do. But this Virginia team has also accomplished a lot that it hasn't, right? That the program really hasn't in recent years. So huge spot, huge opportunity for the Hoos against the Hokies, of course. Fitting.
Yeah, as Mitchell Melton put it on the pod last week, when he found out that Virginia Tech had won 19 of the last 20, he was like, that's appalling. So obviously, there's a lot going into this game. 7 o'clock kickoff on ESPN, another primetime showing for Virginia. It's almost like a rinse and repeat. You know, they had the Wake Forest game 7 o'clock on ESPN and didn't go great. So now you get a second chance at it.
Yeah, and they've had this will be their sixth night game at Scott Stadium this season, so they should be used to how the day flows, how the schedule works. They should have all that in their back pocket, right? And I think one of the keys going into Saturday is just start fast, right? Start fast. Don't let Virginia Tech kind of hang around, right? I mean, start fast. Jump on them. You know, they've already hired the next coach for next year in James Franklin. So who knows kind of what the state of the mind is of the Hokies team after Saturday's loss to Miami and last week's craziness with the hiring of James Franklin. So that would be a huge point of emphasis for Virginia. They always talk about wanting to start fast, win the they call it the middle eight, which is just the 4 minutes before and after halftime, and then finish strong in a fourth quarter. To me, start fast, jump on them, and make a 3-8 team kind of quit, right? I mean, that would be a huge key. Virginia jumped on Duke the last time the Hoos were in action, and I thought that was absolutely big for them. They didn't finish great in that game, a little sloppy in the fourth quarter, but they were up 31-3 going into the fourth, so it didn't matter. You can start fast, you can make a team with nothing really on the line, quit probably.
Yeah, I don't know if you watched much of that Miami Virginia Tech game from this past weekend, but
Yeah.
it was an interesting one because it felt like Miami jumped on them, pretty early, but then they just kind of let them hang around for a while.
I saw, I watched a lot of that game, and I saw on TV afterward, on the highlights afterward, I think it was like Miami experiences a close call. Well, no, it was not a close
No.
call. I mean, there was an onside kick at the end of the game, but I still wouldn't say it was close at any point. There was never a point where you thought Virginia Tech would win the game. I don't know. Carson Beck was pretty good against the Hokies, four touchdowns, no interceptions. I just think you
Had
jump
a couple
on them.
close calls.
Yeah, but overall, decent performance for Beck, who has struggled at times this season. I think you jump on them early and you got a good shot.
Yeah, no, I would agree. It was interesting just kind of the way that game finishes.
Yeah.
Now, Tech has a little bit of a quarterback question mark coming into
Yeah.
this week, which was not something that we expected. And who else but Pop Watson, as a potential foil yet again for Virginia's season.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is 2 years ago, it was Kyron Drones that gave Virginia all sorts of trouble, right? They just felt like they couldn't tackle 2 years
Yeah.
ago when Virginia Tech was in Charlottesville. And then last year, Pop Watson was just making play after play, whether it was with his arm or his legs. So I'm sure for John Rudzinski, the Virginia defensive coordinator, he's had 2 weeks to scheme something up to try to figure out the Tech quarterbacks. You got to tackle. You got to tackle them. Simple as that. And I think that the big difference right this year is the last couple of years, by the time Virginia got to play Virginia Tech, of course their season was kind of done, right? They were still playing for bowl eligibility last year, but they were so beaten and battered in
Oh
terms
my
of
gosh.
health, both on the O line and the D line. There was no depth, right? There was a quarterback change.
Look at the running backs last
Yeah, the
year.
running backs, right? Chris Tyree had to play running back. So I know last year was not a good result for Virginia, but I don't know how much you take into it given how different Virginia's roster is, and the state of their depth this year compared to last year.
Well, obviously, you mentioned John Rudzinski and this defense. One of the big questions coming out of the Duke game is Cam Robinson and his health. He did have X-rays and scans down there. They came back clean. They said that they thought it was just a bruise on his knee, but kept him out of the rest of that game. He did play that one play at the start of the second
Yeah.
half. I think that was just him, trying to make a go of it. But it was like, it seems like y'all have got things settled here, and you got the bye week coming up. We haven't talked to Tony Elliott because obviously they don't do any press conference during the bye week, so he's still, I guess, we haven't had an official update since the game on Cam Robinson.
Yeah, we should get one. We should get one tomorrow or Tuesday,
Yeah.
Should get one Tuesday. And for Virginia, I think two, which helps if Cam can't play. You do have Maddox Marcellus, who has played quite a bit. Landon Danley filled in for Cam in the first three games of the year when Cam was out to start the year with the collarbone injury. But it would be tough if you don't have Cam Robinson. But I don't think it's something that's insurmountable. Yes, he's won them games, but they also wouldn't be putting a first-time starter out there, somebody who hadn't played all that much this season, if Cam can't go.
And I thought Landon Danley actually looked better against Duke than maybe he did early in the season. Like he was pretty sound in some of those tackles and the angles that he took. I know everyone goes back to that NC State one where he came off the edge and missed CJ Bailey, but he looked a lot more improved. So they do have some depth there, and that's the big thing. Like you're pointing out earlier, like it seems like they have depth all throughout the roster now where they didn't have that last year.
To win in November, you have to look at Louisville, right? Louisville, the quarterback's hurt, the two star running backs are hurt, and they just get absolutely drilled by SMU. Now, SMU's playing good ball. I think I was looking at it this morning, they're 15-1 under Rhett Lashley in Novembers, which is just remarkable. It shows you how you take a team on an ascent. But Louisville's also depleted. And you think about all the depth. You think about some depth issues there. There are other schools, Syracuse. My goodness. Oh, boy. Oh, oof. Right? It happens. But this Virginia team and the way, Justin Sparrows and Tyler Jones managed in the offseason with the plan to bolster and fill out the O lines and the D lines with defensive backs with just massive. Felt like, in this post-spring, it felt like every other day they were getting a new defensive back commit. People wondering why you need all these defensive backs. It's because if you want to play into November with games on the line and you want to play in it, if you want to have a chance to play in a conference title game, you have to have bodies and able bodies to do so.
It looks like they should be getting a couple other guys back after the bye week. That's always the expectation, is maybe some guys that just need an extra week to get ready and rested. We are recording this before the press conference, obviously. I have another podcast coming up later in the week with Andy Bitter from Tech Sideline previewing that game. I'll have more of those press conference updates for that one. That'll come out on Wednesday. But let's talk about this, and I wanted to put it in a different kind of a way. Like, what's on the line? Obviously, we've talked about a few of the things, but rank as far as what's on the line. What's the most important to what's like the least important? So I put out a couple here, and I want to kind of go through them. A lot of different storylines coming into this game. All right. ACC championship. Obviously, that's one that's very obvious, everyone. Win and you're in. How about Tony Elliott picking up his first win versus Virginia Tech, especially with now James Franklin like looming in the distance and that whole storyline of this? And then UVA losing 19 out of the last 20 opportunity against a Hokies team that's in a down season right now. You don't often get that. And then just UVA perception nationally. It's another 7 o'clock kickoff on ESPN. So rank those in order of what you think is the most important, what's on the line.
I think first and foremost is the chance to play in an ACC title game, because if you do that, you have a shot to go to the CFP. And in today's college football, at least nationally, and I don't know if I necessarily agree with this, but it's all about the CFP, right? Virginia's having a great season. They have 9 wins after the last 3 years, and considering how much of a struggle it had been for Virginia, they're a success this season, no matter what happens the rest of the way. But if you really want to be relevant nationally, right, you got to play in that ACC title game. Just in terms of the trajectory of the program, I think. Just from that perspective, because then you got a shot at the CFP. And if you can get to the CFP, man, you really take off. So I would think playing in the ACC title game, that's more important than anything else. I do think, and you make a good point about Tony beating Virginia Tech for the first time. Like I'd mentioned, he gets the contract, the automatic contract extension for 1 year, for an additional year on a contract if he beats Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, they made the splash hire with James Franklin. And at Penn State, he traditionally recruited Virginia really well, particularly, the 757. Virginia's done better, and I think they've done pretty well in Richmond, especially lately. Like Keith Gaither and Kevin Downing, the running backs coach and the defensive tackles coach, have done a really nice job in Richmond. But if you can. You can knock them off a little bit. If you can knock off Virginia Tech, then at least you have that in your back pocket too when you go into the 757. So that's a big deal also. What was the other one? Just the 19 of 20.
Yeah, just getting off the schneid against Tech.
Yeah, and to do it in a big spot would be important. So I guess I would go 1, 2, 3 in that order. Was there a fourth?
There's national perception, but yeah, I
Yeah,
would rank that
that
fourth.
kind of goes along the lines with the first one to me. Because if you beat Virginia Tech and you earn your way to the title game with that, like you're gonna get some extra headline and respect.
That's kind of how I listed them, and that's kind of the order I was thinking
Yeah.
of. But let's real quick just go through some of those. We talked about the ACC championship stuff a lot, so we can kind of go into the next one that Tony Elliott picking up the first win against Virginia Tech, especially with James Franklin looming out there. I know Tech fans had a glorious week last week that had nothing to do with anything that happened on the field or anything that was actually, football. Just with celebrating the James Franklin hire and everything that goes along with that. And I mean, I thought it was a great hire. Obviously, it was a great hire. If you can get a guy like that has that experience that is recruited in the state of Virginia very well and just kind of has that national perception too. But I've also liked the last couple of Virginia Tech hires too when they made them. Like, I liked Brent Pry. I had questions about his experience level, obviously, but I thought it was a good culture fit to kind of get them back to that Tech culture, which I think he did in the end, honestly. And then Justin Fuente before that, I thought was a really intriguing guy coming up from the group of five from Memphis. Both those guys didn't work out though, even though I like the hires. So we'll see what happens with James Franklin. It seems like a home run, but is anything a sure bet in college football these days?
No, it's and it always seems like post hire, it's everybody feels it's a good hire, right? That's typically how it
If
goes.
it starts off with thinking it's a bad hire, then you really did something wrong.
Yeah, so I do think he brings serious credibility for Virginia Tech. I mean, just based on how much he's won. I know folks get a upset and the Penn State fans didn't want, we're angry about him not winning the top 10 games, the big game. And certainly this season spiraled a little bit after they had lost to Oregon. But he's still a good coach who's done it for a long time. And I think he's going to bring some serious, credibility to Virginia Tech after, that program has struggled and not been at the standard that it wants to be at.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, that's been the talk all over the message board all week. It felt like, and even like in my interviews last week during the bye week on radio shows and stuff, everyone was like, "Well, what do you think about the James Franklin hire?" I was like, "I thought we were coming on here to talk about like what Virginia's done this season. They got
Yeah.
9 wins, compete for an ACC title." But that was the talk of the town for sure last week. And the interesting thing about the next item is the U of A losing 19 out of the last 20 is. One thing that we've kind of talked about is almost more than half the roster has never played Virginia
Yeah.
Tech before, has never had any of these scars against Virginia Tech. And that's something that I talked to Mitchell Melton last week about. But it was interesting because I wanted to talk to him because he has had scars from other rivalry games, most certainly losing all four of his games against Michigan at his years in
Yeah.
Ohio State. And so that kind of carries over to like knowing the importance of a rivalry, but while also not having that directly against Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I mean, and there are other guys on the roster too, right? Like Chandler Morris was at TCU and SMU, TCU Baylor, they have rivalries. He was at Oklahoma, Texas, right? That's a big one for sure. So I think just because you hadn't been in a program at Virginia, like doesn't mean you don't understand rivalry. And then there are also enough guys who have been around, right? James Jackson, Jameer Carter, right? Those type of guys who understand the significance of the Commonwealth Clash and how badly they want to win, right? To beat Virginia Tech for the first time in their careers. So I think there are enough people around that and enough experience in that locker room where everybody will know. And then you throw in that you're playing for something more than the rivalry. They'll be plenty motivated and they'll be focused. I have little doubts about that.
Antonio Clary, still the only player on the
Yes.
roster that has beaten Virginia Tech. And if they were to win this week, I think he'd be the first player, UVA player to beat Tech twice in his career in like more than 2 decades.
He's still around, right? The lone member of that Orange Bowl team.
Still kicking, and they finally put him on the depth chart too. So congrats to Antonio Clary on making it there. All right, that's we've talked a good amount about football. Let's transition now to the Greenbrier. Virginia UVA men's basketball splits, beats Northwestern 83-78, and then loses to Butler 73-80. And Greg, how I wanted to kind of go about this is I got five burning questions. I kind of delved into the message board and Twitter, see what fans are talking about after this game. It's a lot of what we were also talking about. Just kind of putting these in there and kind of diving into these questions right now. And I try to not go all negative because I think there were so definitely some positives that came out of the weekend. But normally when you're coming off a loss, everyone's like doom and gloom scenarios and everything else. But let's start with the number one most burning question. Can this team defend on the perimeter?
Man, Butler had a lot of open threes. They were what, 6 of 15 from deep. They had a lot of open shots, and I think there was natural to be a regression. Virginia was looked really, really good defensively through its first four games, but it also didn't play anybody good. Didn't play anybody up to their level of competition. And to be fair to Ryan Odom and his staff, they had said, right, preseason, first week, second week, even this past week, like it's still a work in progress defensively. Their numbers look really good because they were just beating up on the little guy. But he knows it's a work in progress, and he said last night that that there are still things this team needs to work on defensively, ball screen defense, that kind of thing. And they just weren't fast enough to close out. And then even Butler had so many open looks inside the 3-point line. I just that's probably the most concerning. And even Odom said after the game, like in addition to the 3-point defense, like there were too many times the team just relied on Ugo, Ugani Anyenso to block a shot
And
at
he
the
did a
rim.
lot.
He did a lot. Yeah, I think Thad Matta had a funny line after the game. He's like, somehow we missed 30 shots. I bet he's like probably 25 of them were swatted by the big guy. But I think it's gonna take time. You still got to keep in perspective. It's what, 10 new players? The whole team's new. It's all new players coming together, and they got to learn how to play with each other. And I think that even corresponds to what's going on offense. The Ryan Odom was not happy with how much dribbling there was going on offense last night against Butler. He was saying, they probably got to move the ball a little bit better as a passing team. So I think, you play these games to kind of figure out where you are. You can't just play, the smaller schools until conference play. You got to play some of these games to figure out how good you might be.
You're using it as a data point early on to kind of see like what are some of those things. I think there's a culture shock thing going on right now too with the perimeter defense because Virginia fans aren't used to just guys just kind of blowing by and
Wide open.
getting into the paint and wide open threes on the perimeter. It's a little bit of a culture shock there, but I did notice a lot of the things that Ryan Odom pointed out. Like some of the ball screen defense was some of the worst I've seen in a while. Like even Chance Mallory, who we're gonna talk about a little bit, had a great weekend. There are a couple times where I'm just like, dude, like you are a good defender. Like I know you can get over these screens, and but I Finley Bizjack
Man, he was good yesterday.
was just yeah he was. Getting past all these guys, he was getting open shots and was really controlling the game. A lot of their guards were doing really well off those screens too, and kind of how they read the game. And there is a little bit of an over-reliance, I think, and this is kind of how the defensive system, I think, is set up to funnel things into Onyensu and Grunlow to block shots at the rim. But at the same time, like you don't want them just to get there at will easily. And that's also how a lot of those threes were created because guys were getting into the lane so easily. So I still don't know who I would say the best perimeter defender on the team is. I would lean towards probably Mallory and White, and then Gertrude coming off the bench, but he just doesn't. I don't think offensively he's not going to get as much game time because of the struggles on that end. But he could definitely provide them something defensively, and I think that's why you saw him play for a couple minutes against Butler.
I think so. And two, with the defense, there were even times during a game against Butler, right? They'd make a basket and they weren't quick to get in the press, right?
Yeah.
That's been one something Odom that they've done really well early in the year. But yesterday I noticed a few times Odom and his assistants after a made UVA basket, kind of imploring, like, let's go, get up, I think there's still some adjusting going on. Because I wonder too if they would have been a little bit more on the press defense, like could that have made an impact late? And I just it just didn't come to fruition.
Yeah, as it hasn't really clicked there fully yet. You speak of, passion from the sidelines. Ryan Odom ended up with a technical in this game that I know we texted about, but it was a strange refereed game against Butler, to say the least. I think that's putting it lightly. I don't know what was going on there.
Both sides were unhappy. I'll tell you
Yeah.
that. Noticing, I watched Thad Matta work the refs a little bit, watched Odom and his assistants kind of look over and work the refs at times. It just felt like it was a poorly managed game. Like maybe not so much the call. There are a lot of ticky-tack fouls, but I think that's the way they're being the way the game's being emphasized
Yeah.
and called this year. But I just think the way, like all the reviews and the back and forth, like with talking with each staff, each team, I think that was part of the problem. And then, Virginia gets called for a travel, and after Butler's player got away with literally the same thing on the end just moments earlier, and I think that pushed Ryan over the edge. He apologized for it. In his post-game presser, and he said he told the team that that can't happen, and he's supposed to be the one to keep his poise.
Sure.
So I think he realized it was a mistake because I think that got because Butler hit both of the free throws. I can't remember if that took it from a 4-point Butler lead to a 6-point lead or a 6 to an 8. I can't quite remember exactly, but it did have an impact on the game as Virginia because. Virginia only led for 23 seconds of the game against Butler. It was after Malik Thomas had a bucket to go ahead, and it just didn't last. They were playing catch up the whole afternoon, and you just felt like that technical a little bit, is tough when you're already, treading water and trying to play from behind.
Yeah, sure. The fouls ended up being pretty even,
Yeah.
19 to 21. The free throws were not. It was Butler had 29 attempts, Virginia only had 15. Not to say if Virginia had more free throw attempts that they would have made the free throw attempts that we'll talk about in just a second. But it was there's been and it wasn't even just this game. There have been through all six games, a couple times where, especially Malik Thomas, I've noticed goes to the rim, gets a lot of contact, and has just not been getting calls this year. So I don't know if that's a new kind of thing that they're kind of trying to call because there's a lot of ticky-tack on the floor fouls,
Oh,
but
God.
some of the contact at the rim hasn't been called as much this year too.
I'd agree with that, but the ticky-tack fouls on the
It's
perimeter, it's
annoying.
like just let the kids play. Like let's go. Like let there be some flow to the game. I felt like at times yesterday there were just so many stoppages that neither team really could get in a flow. Butler had a lot of open shots, so they were all right. Whereas Virginia just there were times offensively it just didn't look like they were in as much rhythm as they were the previous four games.
Yeah, I don't know who was asking, hey, can we get more ticky-tack on the floor fouls? Like
Oh,
that's what this
God.
game's missing. But all right,
Yeah.
we've only gotten through one of the burning questions, so let's get to the next one here. Probably the bright spot of the whole weekend was Chance Mallory. 13.5 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 2.5 steals in those two games at the Greenbrier. So the big question in everyone's, group fan chats and everything is, should Chance Mallory actually start?
Yeah, it's probably a fair question to ask. And if you noticed, he started the second half yesterday. He was on the floor with the four start with the four other starters while Hall was on the bench. Now, I don't know if that was because Hall was in some foul trouble, or if because Chance provided UVA, a burst of energy like he repeatedly has shown he can do. I will say, without Hall's performance down the stretch against Northwestern, they don't win that game. He was awesome. in the last 10 minutes of that game against Northwestern, right? He hit the big three, and then he sank, what, five of the six free throws he took to secure the win. So I still think he has value as the veteran who's been there before, who's not going to be rattled, not going to be overwhelmed when the moment gets to crunch time. So to me, coming off the Northwestern game, I don't know if you could say, like, you have to start Mallory over Hall. Now, I understand why fans probably want to see that, because when Chance gets in the game, it's always quick, right? He's so fast, and he's so speedy to make something happen, right? Whether it's driving to the rim and scoring with a layup, or taking a charge like he did against Butler, or a steal or an assist. He's always doing something that seems to ignite Virginia. So I understand it, but maybe it's just a little too early to make that move. Ryan even said after, I think it was after the Northwestern game, had told us in the post-game presser, like, yeah, Chance could be starting, but he really does provide a good jolt of energy, and you would lose that. I don't know if there's somebody who can repeat that off the bench. Jakari White has done it at times, but Mallory's just so good off the bench. Like, I don't know if you want to lose that. And I don't know. That's just my opinion. I don't think Hall's done anything to be like definitively earn a demotion. He wasn't good against Butler, the foul trouble, turnover, like there were issues there, but he was excellent against Northwestern down the stretch when they needed him to be.
Yeah, he had an off game, and players have off games. There's so many games of the season that it's going to happen. I came down to the same side as you when a lot of people were talking about this. Is I think that I really value Dallin's, kind of veteran presence in that starting lineup. And here's the other thing with Chance is that you talk about that boost that he gives you coming off the bench and the plays that he can make, just as an energy factor. But also, like, here's the thing that happened against Butler, like. They corrected. They saw that, okay, this is probably a better Mallory game. And guess who played the majority of the second half was Chance Mallory. Like they, you can, it doesn't always matter who starts the game. That is one of the most overblown things in college basketball and basketball in general. It matters like who is closing the game, who's playing the majority of the minutes. And so that's where I kind of land is like, you can correct during a game if it's like, okay, yeah, Chance Mallory needs some more minutes tonight. Let's keep him out there. I thought it was really interesting in the Northwestern game first, like they were really deferring to him to like be the guy creating on offense. There's Malik Thomas out there and Tester Ritter was out there, but they were like, Chance, like, and Dallin was even out there too. They were like, Chance,
I
take the
don't,
reins.
yeah, that lineup when they used both of them was interesting. I thought, there's some value with that too, right? Because Dallin doesn't necessarily have to be on the ball when Chance is in the game, and vice versa. They can kind of share the responsibility. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch how it progresses going forward. But right now, I just don't think that's a necessary move yet.
Yeah, I think it's a little premature. If it gets down the line and maybe Dallin's having a couple more games like that, then maybe. But I think right now I like where the rotation is at. I think there's just some things they need to do better. One of those is shooting better. 13 to 51 from three, 25.4% this weekend. I know in the offseason they brought in a ton of guys that have been good career 3-point shooters, around 40% from three. But it just hasn't really clicked yet. It hasn't happened yet. And I know we can talk about the whole ballroom concept, but that's also been the case in prior games to this. Like at some point, these guys actually have to make shots. So the question is this actually a good shooting team?
I think there are certain guys. Jakari White showed it yesterday. I felt like every time he touched the ball, he had a chance to make his 3-point shots. I think he's a real, he's a real, prime time shooter. Thomas, I like his confidence in transition. Like that's where you see him as a strong shooter from deep, right? The way he pulled up and took that three from the right wing in transition, I was like, man, there's a lot of confidence in that shot. So that was good. I think he made three threes yesterday too. White had four. I think those two guys, yeah, you haven't seen it a ton from Lewis yet. Like, it hasn't been there yet from Lewis, right? And he led the MAC last year in 3-point percentage, if I'm remembering
Yeah,
correctly.
over 40%.
Yeah, haven't seen it quite click. DeRidder, I don't know on this team if that's gonna be much of his game, right? He
Yeah.
made a three yesterday, but I think his strength is the bully ball. You
Yeah.
know, just let him go to work, and he's so strong, and he's a good passer. I watched the way he moved the ball a little bit this weekend, and I was impressed with the way he passed the ball. Of course, he got tested yesterday for the first time.
He had a couple that got away from him against Northwestern, but yeah, I think for the most part, he can create some offense. The one
Yeah.
that's not been a shooter at all is Johan Grunloe, the center. I
Yeah.
know there's a lot of talk about him being a floor spacing big. He's only made one this year, and just has not looked super confident in those attempts yet.
No.
I know that was a big projection in his game, but it hasn't clicked for him yet. So that might be something that we have to kind of recalibrate our expectations for him, especially from distance.
Yeah, I think he's still kind of figuring out the college game.
He
DeRidder
is.
has felt like he's made a pretty smooth adjustment, other than trying to manage his foul trouble. But I feel like DeRidder has a real sense about him and how to play the game. It was yesterday was fascinating from that perspective with the bigs, just because Michael Ajayi from Butler and Drayton Jones, they didn't back down. Virginia had been the more physical, imposing team in each of its first, five games. And then all of a sudden, there's Butler, Big East, used to the bruising style, and they were ready to go, right? DeRidder had his first shot blocked by Ajayi, and then he took an elbow, right? Took the elbow,
Yeah.
took the elbow to the eye, and I still think he played okay, right? 10 points, five boards, but certainly wasn't as dominant as he was against Northwestern.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of a subplot of this whole shooting conundrum is the what is happening at the free throw line. I think there's a couple different things that people have kind of surmised from it. Is it like, are they too tired from the pressing all game? Or maybe they have some dead legs going to the free throw line. I mean, that certainly could be a possibility, but like my thing is, I mean, from like early elementary school age basketball, you always practice free throws at the end of practice, because that's when you're most tired and that's when you want to practice free throws. So I would assume Virginia is also doing some of that. But there's guys like Malik Thomas has been mostly solid, missed a couple yesterday from the free throw line. Chance Mallory, I mean, this kid was a 50, 40, 90 shooter in high school, so I know he can hit free throws, but he's missed a lot this weekend. A bunch of other guys missed free throws. Test Ritter has missed a bunch of free throws as well.
Yeah.
So there's got to be something going on at the free throw line right now.
Yeah, they're gonna have to figure that out. I don't know how. Like, that's the one. And sometimes I don't know. Like, just covering different coaches, right? Like, different stops in my journalism career. Like, most of the coaches you talk to are just like, I don't know. Like,
Yeah.
whether it's going good or bad, like, they're
It's
just
either
like, I
good or
stay away.
bad.
We shoot a bunch, but I don't know. So I don't know. I haven't asked Odom about it yet in any of the post-game pressers or availabilities, but if it continues, right, the question will have to be asked. And I'm sure, to
And
make
they did have a 30 for 36 game against Northwestern where they made a ton of free throws in that game. So, I mean, overall for the season, it hasn't been great. So that's why you bring up the question. All right, second to last burning question here is Malik Thomas turning a corner for Virginia. Obviously, everyone, he was one of the WAC's leading scorers last year. Over the last three games, 18.6 points per game. That includes the two Greenbrier games. He had 22 against Butler for his season high. It seems like he's doing a lot of good stuff, scoring at all three levels. There is a little bit of tunnel vision sometimes on those drives where maybe he could dump off some passes and stuff. But I think overall, like we're starting to get a little bit more of the Malik Thomas we expected.
Yeah, and he was good in that Villanova scrimmage too. I know it didn't count, but
Yeah.
he scored a bunch in that one too. And then after the game on Sunday night, I had asked Odom a little bit about Malik and what he thought, and he said, we know Malik can score the ball. That was basically his answer. Like, he's done it everywhere he's been. It's proven. He's a guy that's confident. Virginia just needs to see, he needs to be consistent. He said, not every night is Malik going to score, 24, 22, whatever. But it's got to be an option. And I think, if you can count on either Malik Thomas or Tess DeRitter to give you 20 plus, you got to feel pretty good about Virginia's
Sure.
chances, right? Well, if one of those two give you 20 plus, because DeRitter seems like he's going to be involved most nights,
Yeah.
heavy, heavy, heavy. And then, Thomas is probably the next option, right? That's just my opinion in the early going.
Yeah, I wrote before this game, the amount of different scoring options that Virginia has, and it kind of changes around like whose night it is. I think you saw Northwestern, like obviously Tess DeRitter was the hot hand, so they went to him a lot until. Then they were like, all right, maybe Chance Mallory a little bit here to kind of give him something different, beating guys off the dribble. In this game against Butler, like they were like, all right, Malik Thomas is the guy that has, the best matchup tonight. And so there's a lot of mismatch hunting in this offense, which I guess this brings us to the next thing is, what's the half court offense right now? Because 14 assists over the two games this weekend is not great. And I know Ryan Odom says his teams pride themselves on sharing the ball, but we haven't really seen them share the ball at a high level yet.
And that's kind of what I was talking about a little bit earlier when I
Yeah.
said, after the Butler game, he was like, the ball just too much dribbling.
Yeah.
That was probably, outside of the defense, that was probably his biggest complaint, was just like, there's too much dribbling going on. You got to move the ball better. So I don't know how much to criticize, and then also how much to just chalk it up to, like, you got 10 new guys playing together. They got to figure it out,
Yeah.
right? There's some different combinations out there too, right? Devin Till has played for the first time this past weekend. He was involved some. So like you throw him into maybe some lineups that they haven't used yet, with when he's involved. You saw Mallory and Hall on the floor at the same time. You saw, there was just some different combinations when DeRitter was in foul trouble. I wonder how much, like, those lineups after he fouled out with over the last 6 minutes they had played with, right? And they still won the game. So I don't know. I think it's just work in progress, very similar to the defense.
Yeah, it was very flat, like Odom said. Like it was just a lot of dribbling, one-on-one matchups, and at times like his VCU offenses kind of reflect that because it's a lot of mismatch hunting and kind of looking for the best, matchups to go attack. But in the Marshall game before that, I know we were focused on football that day, but watching that game back, like there were some times where the ball never hit the floor. Like they were swinging around the perimeter, getting good shots. So that's in there, and that's kind of what they need to get back to. I like to see a little bit more creativity with some of the I guess plays and sets that they're running out there to kind of get away from that just kind of deflating. And I think that's where Dallin Hall comes into this because he's a guy that will move the ball to the right spots on the floor. So that's why you need a guy like him out there.
Yeah, I think one of their better passers is DeRitter. Like,
Yes, yeah.
watching, he had a couple of passes where, just watching this past weekend pretty closely, like, where the ball touches his hands and in an instant it's to somebody else.
Yeah.
So I know he's been scoring a lot, and that I wonder, as they play some bigger, more physical teams like they saw on Sunday, with Butler, like, is that going to be part of the plan to get DeRitter involved as maybe a little bit of a distributor, and have him, separate the defense? I'm no basketball expert, right? I don't know X's and O's basketball like I do football. But to me, like, just watching DeRitter, like, he always has a plan when the ball's in his hands. Like, it feels like
Yeah.
there's very a rare time with DeRitter where he doesn't know what he's going to do with the basketball.
Yeah, what he wants to get out of that play. He does have some good like high-low action with Grunlow down low, especially that chemistry is probably some of the better chemistry on the team right now. The other thing I was going to point out with the half-court offense, and then we'll get out of here, is the inbounds plays. It seems like every time they're trying to inbound the ball is a struggle, especially when it's, I mean, like Chance Mallory is a good passer, but at being at 5'9" and having like a big 6'5" guy on you inbounding the ball, like that's tough. But it doesn't seem like they're really running anything to get open. They're just like, all right, toss it into the big, like do a big lofted pass inside. And so I'd like to see a little bit more creativity with those inbounds plays because I know they can do that. So we'll see how that kind of progresses. But last thing is, are we good on this whole ballroom concept? Can we like be done with this now?
I have to say, the folks who ran the Greenbrier event did a great job. That the company Intersport, it was a
Sure.
clean event. They had everything that I needed to do my job, so no complaints on my
Which is
end.
not a given. From experience, that's
Oh,
not a
no doubt. Some of these
given.
tournaments and whatever, different off, neutral site events, it can be hit or miss. But this was run well. I thought the atmosphere was really good, right? Easy travel for Virginia fans. I thought they fit in quite well at the Greenbrier.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good location. It got loud in there. I think the place held like, I think the official capacity, I was talking to one of the Intersport folks that said there was 1,100. And
Which I kind of like. I know I wasn't there, but I liked it. Felt good on TV, just kind
it
of
was
like
loud. It
how
was
on
loud
top of
when
things the fans were. Yeah.
when Virginia made a run, the place got really loud. It was like a really good high school environment, basically.
Yeah.
For two games in a long season, it's fine. Now, some of the shooting aesthetics, I don't know how it impacts players. I know, the locker rooms are basically makeshift conference rooms. I don't know how it impacts players, but I think the fans who went probably had a good time.
Yeah. The floor seemed a little slick at times too. I saw a couple
Yeah.
players slipping around out there, which is always just, I mean, we've dealt with it this year with like turf at different places. It's like you hate to see that because it's like the last thing you should have to worry about is the playing field.
I didn't check. I didn't think there was an ice rink under it, but I didn't check.
But yeah, all in all, first loss of the Ryan Odom era, but a lot of stuff that this team can improve on. Some big non-conference games coming up, but obviously this week, Greg, it's all about football. We got a big week ahead. I know everyone's gonna. One of the weird things about this week is we're all trying to get our work done early in the week because we also like to enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday as well. But we hope everyone has a good Thanksgiving this week. And again, we'll have more here on the Who's On podcast later in the week, Greg. But we will we'll be at the press conference Tuesday, and then we'll be there right after Thanksgiving Black Friday in Scott Stadium on Saturday.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun. Big game. Big games are fun to cover. So this should be a fun one on Saturday night. A lot on the line for the Hoos. And perhaps they can punch their ticket to Charlotte.
I didn't mention it earlier, but anyone remember when everyone was calling NC State the biggest game of Tony Elliott's
Yeah, it
career?
wasn't. I never did that, but
There are a lot of people that did, and at the time I was like, you know what? The next game's going to be more important, and the next game after that, and that's what's happened this year.
when you win, the season gets increasingly, the games on the schedule get increasingly more important.
Yeah, so here we are, another big one. It's Scott Stadium coming up this week. All right, Greg, thanks for jumping on. That'll do for the Who's On podcast. Again, we will be back on Wednesday with Andy Bitter from Tech Sideline to kind of provide that full Commonwealth Clash preview. But until then, follow us on YouTube, like, subscribe, and on Apple and Spotify as well. We'll see you later in the week.